Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Jules Gill, video games have returned. It's February.
Yay.
There's all sorts of things. Sifu, Horizon, Elden Ring, Dying Light 2, Ollie Ollie World. They just, mm-hmm. they ain't stopping. They're flooding in. Also, this is the Untitled Pilot Podcast. I'm Scott Tilford, joined by Jules Gill.
Hello, everyone.
Well, we ask people to submit their various questions, thoughts, whatever they would like us to talk about. And I forgot that I said last week I'd carry some stuff over because we had a massive response last week. And I was like, I always want to try and get to as many questions as possible. And then we did end up putting another tweet out.
You can't stop me, mate.
Can't stop the banter. So we've got more updated stuff because obviously this week, Sony decided to buy Bungie just cheekily on the side. Just
we've got Tesco, you know, brand games at home.
So we'll get to stuff like that as well. We'll fold in the latest stuff. But yeah, we'll get through as many questions as we can. Massive thank you to everybody for sending in so many. We got a ton more this week as well. But first question from McAllister NYC, who says, with all the recent pricey acquisitions, do you see console exclusivity becoming more rampant? Well, seeing games on both Xbox and PlayStation become rare. Also, have an awesome Friday. We all appreciate you. Well, same to literally every single one of you.
Thank you so much for your kind words there, mate. In answer to your question, there will obviously still be some first-party titles that will always remain console exclusive, mm-hmm. just because of the fact that they use them as that selling point to get people invested in consoles. But I do think that it will become more and more rare as, well, costs and inflations of creating video mm-hmm. games start to ever creep upwards. I mean, for every Horizon Zero Dawn and every God of War Ragnarok that's coming out around the corner, they've got to be propped up by sales in other departments to make sure that the company is profitable. Mm-hmm. Stuff like Games Pass, stuff like the project, was it Spartan that they said that
Spartacus
they were?
Spartacus is the rumored thing, yeah.
Yeah, like that's going to be the future of video games. It's like a big market with a small subscription-based model attached to it. And because of that, I feel like they're going to have a lot of games across every single platform because it just makes the most sense for would-be publishers, for the developers, keeps the cost down on everyone else's side. And it means that you get the maximum amount of people as a big net to lure in those little fish here.
Because we haven't talked about the Bungie thing that much. We did some news on it, like when it initially broke me and Josh, which all the best to Mr. Josh Brown. He's got the vid. He's got the fast recovery to Mr. Josh Brown. But yeah, the Bungie thing, you know, it obviously came out in the days following that a lot of the $3.6 billion acquisition fee is actually going back into the company. It's going to be given back to staff and promoting people and everything else. And there's a lot of talk around the fact that because Jim Ryan mentioned, Sony's Jim Ryan, mentioned an aggressive roadmap for live services, that they largely did this deal to acquire Bungie's netcode and the way that their live service platforms work. Mm-hmm. And then PlayStation then said, they have 11 live service games planned. So it seems like that's going to be the push to go down that route. But like, I think that's the thing. I think in regards to exclusives, live service stuff, I imagine, will be everywhere because I think they just go, well, we had 11 Destinies and that was just taking over in the background.
Yeah. Well, this is the thing. How many times did you notice that when Destiny came out, every other game tried to ape that and say, we are the new Destiny? Yeah, yeah. Problem is that we are now in 2021 and that was in 2018 when that was being spouted. So things have kind of changed.
I think that's killed, Anthem, Avengers, they all just died.
The live service model to me is the god dregs, the absolute milky cock of this entire industry. I do not like it at all because it is just like, I don't understand why I would want to log into a game and work on it. You know what I mean? Like it's doing a shift on a video game now.
Oh, Ben Webb said that. He's like, games as a job.
I feel like I need to put the old miner's hat on and then just go down there. So, what are you up to?
Oh, you know, I'm just going down the mine and I'm going to do a little bit chipping away.
I'm just doing my dailies.
Destiny 3.
I'll be with you in a minute. I've got to catch 5 orbs or whatever the hell it is.
I don't know why I went Newcastle. It's because I'm talking to you from Newcastle. That's why. It wasn't a... wasn't an accent I chose basically because of the mining culture. Should have done Wales.
I didn't even think of that. But I mean, no, we're a proud mining folk, I think, in the Northeast. But no, I think that's the thing. There's a fine line to walk. Sony are a very hubristic company. I think they'll go complete money guzzling first is my assumption with them. I think they'll try and see what they can get away with, like they did with Destruction All-Stars, where they started charging people for chapters of the story.
Yeah.
And it massively tanked. But yeah, in terms of console exclusivity, it's interesting because for me, Sony have a very specific formula for what they're, you know, every God of War, Days Gone, Horizon, they all play the same. They have the same camera angles. They have the same components. It's the Last of Us formula. Like, they've just taken the Last of Us and applied that to so many other games. And I think that then means that they have to make increasingly safer bets to, if we're going to do a big 20-hour exclusive, it has to be this thing because that's what sells. And so that's the potential warning I see. But yeah, in terms of overall exclusives, I think going forward, Xbox will lock all their stuff down. I still think Call of Duty will go exclusive. Fallout, Doom, Elder Scrolls, and then Sony will be like, well, we've got Horizon and God of War.
Yeah, I do agree with you because I think that, well, Microsoft has been very shrewd in how and what they've purchased recently, because being able to say, yes, it's a timed sort of, everyone gets a go on it, but as soon as it goes after that time, maybe it'll be locked down to console exclusive stuff. But I don't know, unless they're going down the route of saying that, oh yeah, Game Pass is going to be on PS5. That is a huge swathe of their audience that they're cutting out by saying that it is exclusive. Like, you imagine going up to somebody and saying, okay, you've got a player install base of 1 million players, obviously quite small in today's market. And then you go, okay, cool. Now what we're going to do is, how would you like to have only 100,000 players? No, I wouldn't like that. That sounds stupid. Why would you? Well, unfortunately, that's what exclusives is. But you'd have those 100,000 players in the palm of your hands. It's like, yeah, but does that mean that they're guaranteed to spend more money on microtransactions or in-game purchases and stuff like that? No, not really. You just have a smaller but more dedicated fan base.
Yeah, I mean, it's weird as well because we'll talk about this because someone else asked about this in a question further down the line. But like, you know, PlayStation are very much bigging up PlayStation Studios. Like, they came out with that logo last year, and that's now in front of everything, and you know, they're green lighting all these different film and TV projects, and it's like they want PlayStation Studios to be this big, like almost Marvel, almost Disney style thing that just goes across so many different platforms. And so, but for me, like, the knock-on effect of having, you know, a Ghost of Tsushima movie, a Horizon movie, and the Last of Us TV show or whatever, is that all those like pillars that sit in the middle of that, the games, have to be the safest thing possible, because you're then green lighting all these other things on the side.
I mean, like, if nothing else smacks of a game lacking originality than when it starts getting movie chat or like TV shows, because it's like, cool, we can't really take much of a risk with this because we're turning it literally into a marketable and a piece of merchandise that we need people to easily be able to digest and then say, oh, I saw that film. I wonder what the games are like. Oh, it's going to be exactly the same experience.
Tommy doesn't even think that works. Like, we talked about this on the main part I did with Ben Roy, but like, Quantum Break tried that. Obviously, the TV show was inside the game, and then Defiance tried that, and no one cared. Like, and I don't even know if cognitively people do watch something and then go, I can't wait to play the game, if it's not, you know, like tie-ins, like it was with the old Lord of the Rings games or something.
Do you remember there was a sci-fi game that was like, had big sort of like crabby aliens, and that had like a TV show?
that's Defiance.
That was when they tried
doing like, we've got a TV show in the game, and it's
bad.
Gonna be one of them will complement the other, and it's just like, people don't take media in like that. I know what PlayStation are going for, and we're obviously spinning way off from the question, but like, still, that whole thing of why they bought Bungie, what they're talking about, PlayStation Studios, that whole push for the future, that seems to be their way of rivaling Game Pass, just saying, look at these PlayStation IP we have, can you believe how insanely huge they are? Because even this morning it was talked about that they're going to do a Destiny TV show, and sort of like flesh all that stuff out. And I just, maybe, but I don't think people only want to live and breathe a certain brand. I just don't think that's the case.
Well, it used to be like that in gaming. It used to be like able to galvanize a force like that, because I mean, look, when Minecraft came out, look how pervasive that was within the mainstream. But this isn't Minecraft. This doesn't have the appeal. It has a story. It has characters, beginnings, ends. It just, I don't know,
like, if
man,
you had a live service component that was running alongside a TV show and a potential movie for the finale or something. Like, I see that on paper being a potentially exciting thing, but I also think you have to tell the safest possible story in there to do a long form thing that even works across mediums. I just think it results in really safe bets.
Yeah, I mean, like, if a character becomes an absolute beloved star on a TV show and isn't Game of Thrones going to try and kill everyone off at the drop of a hat, then you're just going to go, right, okay, well, I guess they're the main hero for the rest of time immemorial.
Yeah, and then you get all stuff like the Disney shows, like Book of Boba Fett, which is, like, boring as hell, or, like, something where nothing can happen.
I know this is completely a tangent now, but, like, I've heard very, very divisive things about this Book of Boba Fett. I haven't actually watched any of it yet.
I've heard that episode
1 to 3 are meant to be amazing, and then 5 to 6 are ridiculous sort of things. And then there's like people saying there's like Power Ranger style people in. I'm like,
it's probably
what
the best
going on? Like,
bike gang. I've seen bits and pieces. I'm going to check back in for the last two episodes because apparently there's a whole bunch of stuff in there. But even so, most of that stuff in Star Wars case is just people doing the Leo meme and just pointing at things and just be like, well, I know what that is. And it's like, I've felt that energy. I get it. I get why you bank on it. But in Star Wars case, in Disney's case, it's all way too safe and boring. Mm. But yeah, that's my overall thoughts on the whole exclusivity thing and where PlayStation are at and like the potential pitfalls of banking so much on those IP. Next question from Nate the Gaming PT, who says, I'm sure we're all fed up of talking about companies purchasing studios. So the only question I have is, which one real life Pokemon would you have?
Oh, what a question. How do you even narrow it down?
I used to dream this when I was a kid. When Pokemon was blowing up in like the late 90s and I was on the way to school, I would talk to my mum about having a little Pokemon in the house. And I wanted that so badly because Ash's mum in the TV show has the Chansey that helps out in the kitchen
and
stuff.
And then doesn't Mr. Mime come in as like a live-in house guest?
Mr. Mime's terrifying.
Yeah, but like, imagine that. Imagine waking up and just kind of like just this silent just guy just pretending he's behind a pane of glass. I'll tell you what, mate, put yourself in a box, throw it where the key, get in the dungeon.
I go back and forth on it, but mostly humanoid Pokemon freak me out because they don't talk, but they do stand next to you and they just look at you blankly. Like, that's terrifying. Yeah. That would be a really weird horror villain.
No. What would be even more terrifying is if you had the Team Rocket Meowth who did talk. Imagine that, just kind of just like, all right, mate. It's just like, all right, mate. Hey. And it's like, hey, this is a bit creepy, isn't it? So like, am I your owner? Are you my friend? Like, what's the dynamic here? Do I have to feed him? Are you paying rent?
He's just
like,
throwing his head coin at you because he won't get his food for him.
Yeah, weird, man. Very, very weird.
But I think, I would go down the help me around the house. Actually, I don't know. No, I think if we can get anything, I'd get something that lets me get around faster. I want to take flight, basically. So I'm thinking, do I get a Charizard? Dragonite would be good. Maybe just a Mewtwo, because I guess he could also sort of like get you a beer from the fridge.
I worry about Mewtwo. He would just snap at a moment's notice. Like, he's one of the people that should be like, you ask him to do something and he just glares at you and you're like, okay, I'll get him myself. Don't worry about it.
Well, if you've caught him, he should be on your side. But yeah, Mewtwo is potentially going to break out of that. But I don't know.
Are we impacting that thing about, do you remember the trainer leveling system where it was like, if you weren't high enough level, then
they would
disobey you. Yeah, like Charizard does for Ash. Like, are we saying that is a thing? Like, because that is, then we can't pick any sort of super leveled high powered Pokemon, because that means that we're going to be too much of a scrub to use them.
I also don't know where I would keep Charizard. Like, I'm putting him in the garden for a bit, but he's not going to, where's he going to go?
So if he gets rained on in the UK, he dies. Like, this is a nightmare.
Charizard or any of the fire Pokemon would not survive the northeast of England. They just would be constantly a bit damp, and it's not the best.
That's a shame as well, because I really like to have either Growlithe or does he evolve into? Arcanine,
yeah, the one that he turns into.
Or Rapidash, but they're fire Pokemon, so that means
fire
that, again,
Pokemon,
they would.
Well, Growlithe would be all right to ride, though. You can do that in Pokemon Let's Go, and you don't get burned. Whereas like Ponyta and Rapidash have fire on their backs. So
yeah, that definitely does seem like it would
flame.
Be a bit of a problem.
Oh, I might square this off by just saying I'd either have a Snorlax and you can just sort of lie there.
Or you can lie on him, like My Neighbor
Totoro. Yeah. Or like maybe an Eevee and just an Eevee. Or probably just Pikachu, but Pikachu's a bit angry sometimes. I don't know if I trust him. And I don't know. My house alarm went off at 5 a.m. this morning. I don't need any more electrical issues.
I'll tell you what, mate, I've got the right answer here. It's the Squirtle with the cool sunglasses. That's the one. He's the boy. Get him in here. It's like
the Squirtle Squad.
The little Fonzie in a shell, like
just doing little
instead of the finger guns, it's his little like Blastoise little cannon thing. So just goes. Yeah, because when he evolves, does he keep the glasses?
They do, yeah. If you evolve if you catch any of the Squirtle Squad in Pokemon Go and then evolve them, then they keep the glasses. I've got
that
a Blastoise with shades on.
Okay, well, it's the Blastoise with the shades. That is the winner. That is the winner there.
That's a massive show. Next question from Jem Duduku, who says, what video game also taught you a real historical fact?
Oh, blimey. Use the word fact in quotation marks here, because anything from the Dynasty Warriors franchise, I mean, it is definitely not entirely what happened, but it gives you the rough estimation of what happened with the unification of China, the Romance of the Three Kingdoms. And obviously, I guess you could extend that to Samurai Warriors with the unification of Japan. Mm-hmm, I'd say that the unification of Japan probably is a bit more accurate. Mm-hmm. Apart from, I'm pretty sure that Nobunaga Oda wasn't actually a literal devil, but I don't know. I can't. I wasn't there to verify.
That's funny because when I played Onimusha in the first one, and Nobunaga is the evil lord guy you fight at the end, and I didn't know he was based on a real person, so that was like a weird thing at the time. But
there you go. That's a little fact.
Yeah, I think mine would be Medal of Honor Frontline on PS2 because they opens by saying the D-Day landing was June 6th, 1944.
Oh, of course.
And I probably should. I don't know if I should have known that by then. I was like 10. What would I have been? I've been about 14 or something, maybe 12. I don't know.
It's fine. You're not. I don't feel like we as Brits are. Well, we are obsessed with war a lot, aren't we?
Movies and all that. Yeah, but yeah. I don't know whether I should have known that. But my point is that when I was then in university later on, and someone was like, "Oh, do you know the exact date of D-Day?" I forget why the dude was asking now, but I was like, it's June 6th, 1944, because there I have the exact audio bit from Medal of Honor Frontline in my head at all times. That game was brilliant. And the soundtrack and the main theme and everything was really, really cool. But yeah, that, Assassin's Creed, anything like that is very helpful. Question from Michael Patterson. What's the best terrible game either of us have played?
Oh, man. That's such an open-ended question.
That's like the best, I don't know, 4 or 5 out of 10 game ever.
So I've played many a terrible game in my life. Mm. And I would say that, as much as I love it, Silent Bomber isn't a great game.
That's a pretty tight game.
But it's a great game in the fact that I've had lots of fun with it. Mm. But in terms of mechanics, it's not aged very well.
I mean,
Fighter Maker for the PlayStation 1 is pretty terrible. But I had a great laugh with that. Gekido. If you've never played Gekido,
good God, I've heard that name. It's 9 years.
It's like Power Stone. Yes. Like it's like a 2D. No, it's a 3D side-scrolling brawler, mm-hmm, in the vein of kind of like Streets of Rage. But the graphics are so grainy, terrible, and the fact that they're really edgelordy, that it's like you can never tell what's going on.
Oh, dude!
And they just constantly scream at each other, and it's all got like psychic powers in. It's chaotic but very fun.
I think mine. I loved the newest game, Pray for the Gods, which I saw IGN give it like a 3 out of 10 or a 4 or something. I loved it. I think that game is brilliant. We did a video on the best game of 2021 you didn't play, because I was like, I'm going to talk about this game. It's just Shadow of the Colossus with a grappling hook and like survival systems.
That sounds pretty
decent. And I was like, I really liked it, and like the bosses. Like, you know, you take them down with turrets and there's more to them. It's not just climb up one arm and stab or whatever. Like, you do a bit more to free up their weak spots. So that will be mine, but objectively it's terrible according to the consensus. But I thought it was brilliant.
Hey, man, we can't trust IGN ever since they ruined God Hand's reputation by giving it a 3 out of 10, man. It is not a 3 out of 10. That is a banger. It is at least a 7 out of 10. It is that perfect mid ground that Scott and I are always pertaining. Yep. Don't aim for the 10 out of 10 games in life, kids. Aim for the 7 out of 10s, because they got flaws, but that's what makes them so good.
Part of me genuinely would put it out there that there are more incredibly memorable 6 out of 10 games overall in gaming history than there are 10 out of 10s.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
This podcast is brought to you by Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it just makes hiring all in one place so easy, because you just get unparalleled access to job seekers. Plus, listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/WCG. Just go to Indeed.com/WCG right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/WCG. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Like just overall.
Oh, Alpha Protocol is a
phenomenal
example.
That's it. That's the best terrible game that I've played.
There we
go. I love Alpha Protocol. You can't even aim in that game. You'd like aim with like a giant circle reticle and it never goes in the middle. Oh God.
Got to throw Deadly Premonition in there as well, haven't you?
Deadly Prem's phenomenal. Oh. I'll take that over Red Dead 2, like any day. Like, give me that.
What a statement. What a statement.
I would massively play that. Next question from Stee, who says, have you ever played a game with no glitches or bugs? The only one I can remember is Hitman Contract on PlayStation 2.
Whoa.
I guess it's been a while.
That is a long time. Have I ever played a game without any glitches or bugs?
I would say any Nintendo game. Like they actually put the time in to polish everything. I've never had a bug in a single Nintendo game.
I mean, I've literally, just like I said to you before, I've made my way through Metroid Dread and Mario Odyssey recently, and I haven't experienced a single glitch or issue in
pristine.
That. And there's a lot going on in those games as well. Mm-hmm. I would say that if we're going back in the day, I remember Ape Escape very fondly not having any issues, but only because of the fact that I didn't encounter them. Like right. You could say like Metal Gear Solid had a fair amount of bugs and issues in it, but most players didn't come across them.
I didn't see
them. Didn't push them into doing the weird stuff in order to get them. So mm-hmm. I don't know, man.
It's an interesting thing that like bugs and glitches, like I was going to do an whole editorial on the fact that the eighth generation was the generation that made us stop believing, because it's like you expect something to be broken. You expect the server to go down at midnight. You expect the thing to be patched later. Like our default mentality is like, well, I hope they patch that. Like,
do you remember
the
joy of getting home with like the case in your hand? Let's just say it's the classic PlayStation 1 jewel case thing. You've already fractured the front of it because it's made of that crappy plastic, and then you've put it in, it's just immediately playable.
It just works.
It's the Todd Howard of video games.
Yes, but you don't have to install it. It's great.
But speaking of which, when I got Fallout 4, for example, I waited until a midnight release to get that, got home, popped it in, 3-hour download. And I was like, cool, right. Well, so it's going to be 3 a.m. before I get to start playing this. Might as well go to bed then.
I did that with GTA 5, like stood in a midnight queue Blockbuster back in the day, back in 2013.
Shout out to Blockbuster, real ones, remember?
Big old blockers, and stood in the queue, got the copy, managed to install it, I don't know, 2:30 in the morning by the time it had installed on my student internet, and just like played, I don't know, the opening 10 minutes, then I was done.
So,
just immediately unconscious again. But I'd point to Nintendo stuff, but I think, overall, the state of games, we expect patches, and that sucks. Like, we expect stuff to be fixed now, it's just it's a prerequisite. Next question from Jesse, what game have you beat the most times?
Oh, blimey.
Mine is Metal Gear Solid. I've beaten the first one about 24 times.
No, you've not.
I used to just play it. When I was a kid, I just played Metal Gear Solid and over and over again.
Did you speedrun it? I was enamored.
It's been a while since I played the original, but I did it back again in 2015, 2016-ish, because my wife hadn't played it, and I was like, we are sitting and playing Metal Gear Solid. And so we did that. But when I was a kid, that thing was my life. I loved it. That was all I did.
Okay, so petition right here, right now. Everyone listening to this podcast, go over to Twitter @LP89. Message Scott saying charity stream speedrun of Metal Gear Solid. Let's get it going.
I would love to do that. I pitched to you years ago. We should do all the Metal Gears in a row for a charity stream.
I made a face that I probably would never be able to replicate. Probably look like if a cat's anus could taste itself. I was just there like, not because I love you, guest Scott. You are one of my favorite people in the entire world, and I know that you love Metal Gear Solid. But imagine me having,
you're only going to describe the appeal here.
But the thing is that I would just be sitting there watching you tell me how good this game is while showing me. And I'd be like, oh my God, like, great. But at the same time, my mind, I'd be like, oh my God, there's a lot of content.
Oh, dude, if we did all of them in a row, like, you've got 8 hours of cutscenes in Metal Gear Solid 4, but like, it would
That's
be about.
8 hour cutscenes?
Oh, yeah. That game has the Guinness World Record for the most cutscenes in a game.
No, it's surely Death Stranding.
No, Metal Gear Solid 4
what?
Has more like consistent literal cutscenes. Unless it hasn't been broken by Death Stranding, but that game has the world record for it. But yeah, I would totally do all the Metal Gears in a row. That would be hilarious. It'd be like a 2-day live stream. I would totally do that. But yeah, game you've beat the most times, Julian?
Probably XCOM Enemy Within. I played that relentlessly, went back, played through it a few more times. I think that it's just because I've tried to do it on nearly every difficulty with every expansion and mod added in as well. Like XCOM 2 actually hasn't seen as much replay out of me, but that... I am right in thinking that XCOM Enemy Within is the... is the expansion the that was that was added on to the thing. That's the one that I remember because it was like the complete edition.
That's my favorite. That's when they brought in the mechs and
Mechs, and you could hide behind the mechs as the use them as like mobile cover. I love that game so much.
The dudes behind that are doing the new Star Wars grid based thing,
which I am so here for. Like, I tell you what, for fans of that sort of like squad based tactical shooter style thing, there is a lot coming out that is really good. If you've not played it, Phoenix Rising, I think it's Phoenix Point. That's it, made by Julian Goss. Who did the original XCOM games. That's a really good game that's already out there and has just received a big expansion
on Game Pass as well.
And it's on Game Pass. There's Warhammer 40,000 Chaos Gate Demon Hunters, which is basically the exact same but set in the 40K universe. You get to play as like psychic powered Space Marines called Grey Knights. And then there's the Star Wars one that's coming out. We do have the Marvel one that's coming out as well, even though that I'm pretty sure that's going to be riddled with microtransactions, but it is still coming out. It's good time.
At least the animations are solid. I like a good turn-based one where you get good payoff with the animations. If I can do pincer movements and stuff.
And isn't there like a Mario and Rabbids?
Mario and Rabbids, yeah. That thing looks great. I mean, I love
it. It does actually look all right.
So much! The first one is so good.
But I tell you that I got it for the Switch.
I think you did, but I don't think you've played much of it yet.
I haven't played a single bit. It's sat there. It's downloaded, ready to go as my next big game.
They have such a cool mechanic where you're chaining as much movement together as possible. Yeah. So you're bouncing off enemies and then doing your fire stay or whatever. It's so cool. Next question from Karel Type Shaw, who says, Scott and Jules, gaming has become an increasingly expensive hobby, especially with next-gen pricing. In a packed month such as February 2022, if you only have a limited budget for two full-priced games this month, which games would you recommend us to buy? Dying Light 2, apparently. That game seems to be buggy as hell.
Well, I've got Lawson on the other side, who's apparently had some time with it, just been looking at all the reviews and stuff, and he's been saying that it actually looks really decent.
That's cool.
I'm getting a real 50-50 split on this, and people are saying like it's a great game with fantastic world building. Combat can be a bit repetitive. The frame rates and performance issues are but... as an overall package, it's much better than the zombie fair that we've had before.
Yeah, I think my thing with that makes me just go, ugh, is that it's very Ubisoft open world. It's just, here's a lot of stuff. Like when they put that stat out that it'll take you 500 hours to complete it. And I was like, I don't even want to go anywhere near that.
Yeah.
Like just, I mean, I'll probably will play it eventually, but my two for this month, obviously there's Elden Ring and Horizon, but my two are massively Sifu and Oli Oli World. Just Oli Oli's been getting insane reviews this morning. That game looks gorgeous. Great little skateboarding game.
I just watched the review for it on IGN before we came here. And even though I just said before about not trusting IGN after the 3 out of 10 debacle, I have to admit I was just blown away by what I saw, because I was like, it's got a low price point because it is an indie game, so that will save you a bit of cash as well. And then I think that for my second recommendation, as cheesy as it's going to be and as very gimmicky, I would say Dynasty Warriors 9 Empires is finally coming out. It's going to be a terrible game. We all know it is. But it's that sort of... Again, it's the 6, 7 out of 10 game that we've all been dreaming of. Actually, that's fair. Let's be fair. It's a 5 or 6 out of 10.
You're living the Musuo. The thing that I'm most curious about, I think because the thing is that obviously what Karel says is very true. A lot of the premium stuff has gone up to £70.
Yeah.
And that means for a lot of people, that means they're going to get one game. Whatever you do, wait for reviews, wait for hands-on stuff, just generally take a lay of the land. I have full faith in Sifu and Oli Oli World, just because of the developers behind it. Sifu is made by the Absolver people, Oli Oli World. That's what I was going to say before, was that the first and second game is such a really cool, different take on skateboarding. Like, it's all very like fighting game combo style stuff. Lots of like stick, 360s and whatever to do these different moves, chaining stuff together. And it seems like the new one is like doubling down on that even more. So that's something that for me they're more safe bets. But it depends what genres you favor. I think Elden Ring will be the one that everyone just goes, oh my God, you've got to see this.
Do you know what?
But I would also still wait for reviews.
Elden Ring has been a very interesting one of late, hasn't it? Because of the fact that I'm very invested in it, huge fan of like anything that From Software puts out. But I am enjoying how worried people are getting by the directors coming out and saying, actually, we've kind of messed a lot with what George R.R. Martin created. We have changed a lot of the designs since he gave them to us from way back way. They're looking a lot more monstrous now, and that the difficulty is going to be a much lower challenge because he wants more people to actually see it through. And I feel like ooh, talk about alienating two of the biggest aspects of that game's selling points by the difficulty and challenge thereof, mm-hmm. being saying that it's going to be immediately lower, and for fans of Game of Thrones, like world building and lore and stuff like that, saying that the characters that they were given have been changed significantly by that point. So it's like, okay, what is this game actually going to be?
Yeah, because George Martin did initially, like, the only thing he laid out was that he did the lore and the world building, but like, mm-hmm. I thought he hadn't done specific characters, but he must have given them some stuff.
Yeah, I guess it's how he wrote the characters to be, and this is how they've actually interpreted those, how they are.
The difficulty thing is interesting because I think you should just do, I think any creator should do whatever they want to do. So like with Sekiro, I was on the side of like, if they want to make a really brutally hard, annoying, infuriating game that 3% of people finish, that's their choice to do. And I get the accessibility conversation, but that's more about making sure everyone can have a go rather than, you know, like potentially affecting the vision they had, whatever. Like I said, they might just want to make a game that's brutally, stupidly hard. It's more about making sure we have accessibility options in regards to controllers and stuff. But for this, because I will say for Sekiro, that was one of the hardest games I ever played. Like that Genichiro fight, the amount me and you went back and forward on like the different cheese methods to get through it. I eventually just sat down and learned every frame of animation, and I ended up uploading it to YouTube being like, here's me beating it in 5 minutes because oh my God.
Well, it was the weirdest experience of my life because I was lucky enough to get an early version of that game to go through and not have any guides, not have any preparation as to how to go about things or what skills to maximize in and how where to go first sort of stuff. So I had to learn the hard way. And I was like, okay, this is actually quite exhilarating to just go in there completely blind. But it did mean that I actually naturally went towards the cheese strat methods because of the fact that it was like, right, well, no one else is telling me that this is the wrong way to do this fight and I am winning this fight. So here we go.
Well, plus the game dicks you over at every possible chance. I always thought this in any Soulsborne game where I'm just like, oh, if I can game you for a change, then yeah, I'm going to absolutely game this. Like by the time I'd beaten Genichiro and I found out about, what's that giant red demon, Demon of Hatred?
Yeah.
And there was a cheese method for that, which they've patched out now, but I remember
just make him fall off the cliff.
Make him fall off the cliff. And I was like, I'm just going to do that because I've beaten Genichiro. I've proven that I can do this. I've proven to myself that I can overcome this stupid BS game. Like, you know, can you still play games? Whatever. Yeah. And which I, you know, for my personal thing, I was like, I need to beat this game. And then I was like, no, I'm going to climb the building and watch him fall off a cliff. And I just laughed at him, stupid AI thing, falling off the cliff. Loved that. Because them as a dev are laughing at us getting squished 10 times over.
Exactly.
So yeah, I mean, the thing that they said about they don't want to make it as cheap, they want to make it more stressful. I think that maybe is more about atmosphere or maybe giving you more of a fairer shot, not having things one shot you from off screen, whatever. So I guess we'll see, but those are valid things to say. We also did a list on Elden Ring, which did like hardly any views. And I was
that's a shame.
Really apprehensive about it. Like, it might be the case overall. Final question from Haley from Canada. How many flop video game movies will it take before Sony abandons their plan to turn every successful property into a film franchise? Yeah, where are you at on the Uncharted movie? Because I see them stepping up the marketing left, right, and center. They made it so you get a free cinema ticket alongside the upgrade on PS5. And I just see them going, for the love of God, please watch this movie. And all of us going, nah.
I mean, I'm not holding high hopes for it. I just think that it's going to be as generic an actioner as you can possibly get because of what we discussed about before, where they want to toe the line and keep it as close to the marketable as possible and obviously make sure that people know that it's going to be a franchise. Please let it not be a franchise, so everything's going to be by the numbers and not challenge.
I feel like
any
the casting as well. Like,
it's been odd, hasn't it?
A1, it was just like Tom Holland is not... I love Tom Holland, but he's not Nathan Drake. Mark Wahlberg is not Sully. Mm. Done. Like, you know, it almost was done from then. And one of the newest trailers, it shows Mark Wahlberg with a mustache, which I nigh on guarantee is the final scene in the movie.
It's going to be the final cuts,
because he doesn't have the mustache in any of the other scenes. Yeah. Just like, unless you're going to do a reverse Henry Cavill and put a tat on him, then I don't know. But yeah, overall, I don't know. I think this is their plan for the rest of the generation. I think they're going to attempt to, they're going to reach for the skies and try and make PlayStation Studios the next Marvel, the next big cross-media thing.
So because they know that if they do it right, then they'll be able to do a metaverse down the line and it'll all be all the characters teaming up again, like Ready Player One.
Tom Holland himself will shake your hand and say, thanks for buying my movie, guys. but again, massive thank you to everybody for sending in all their questions. We got an absolute ton and we barely scratched the surface again, so I'll try.
Classic.
And carry more stuff over next week, but know that we both love you all and this has been the Entitled Banter Podcast. I've been Scott Tilford, joined by Jules Gill.
Hello and thank you and goodbye and UBP and UBP and UBP.
And UBP, and we'll catch you next time.
Bye-bye. Bye.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.